We're spending the hour on the downturn in our dairy industry. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Over the past decade, that bar graph representing total dairy herds in our state looks like a stair step downward. The graph illustrates Wisconsin losing more than 5,600 dairy farms, a decrease of 44%. So what's going on? Will the contraction continue? And how do you suggest our state stabilize this industry? Can the state or federal government even do that effectively? We're at 800-642-1234. Join in any point. Bring your thoughts through the hour. Mark Stevenson is a dairy policy analyst, and he's director of the UW Center for Dairy Profitability. Mark, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate.
Major dairy producers, Dallas-based Dean Foods and Columbus, Ohio-based Borden, they filed for bankruptcies within the past couple months. We've seen those headlines. What kind of effect has this had on dairy producers here in Wisconsin?
Well, it's been pretty minimal at this point in time. I mean, for example, plants haven't closed yet, or those companies have not gone out of business. They're still processing milk. And Borden's is largely a southern company. They have plants and most of their distribution from Texas all the way over to Florida. Dean Foods is much more national in scope, but we only have one Dean's plant in Wisconsin, although there are several of them just outside the borders, for example, down in Illinois.
What is going on? Why are they filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy?
Some of that gets down to just the segment of the industry that they're involved in. Fluid milk has been declining in per capita consumption for many years. And in 2010, we actually saw that decline starting to show up in terms of total milk sales. So, you know, population had been growing and kind of keeping our total sales flat for a long time. But in beginning in 2010, even that was tailing off. So part of it is just a consumption story, and part of it just has to do with the way that those operations were put together and were being run. Dean Foods reportedly had quite a bit of pension, for example, that needed to be paid, and fluid milk business is a very thin margin business. There's just not a lot to be able to give up there.
Tell us how the supply chain works here from the time the cow is milked to the time it reaches the grocery store shelf. What is that supply chain like?
Well, a farmer gets up bright and early in the morning.
About now. Much early, right.
And, you know, cows are milked usually two or three times a day. And that milk is collected, and typically it's sent off daily to a plant. And a truck will pick the milk up at the farm and will deliver it to a plant. Lots of different kinds of plants, but if you were talking about a beverage plant, fluid milk plant, then that milk will go to the plant. It would be checked for proper temperatures and make sure that there were not any problems with the milk coming in there before it was put into a silo. And at that point in time, it would be put into a silo. Gets processed, bottled into fluid milk, put into different kinds of cartons, and then distributed to retail stores. And, you know, that's kind of the chain. But within, I'll say, a three-day time period from the time that a cow is milked to the time a consumer picks the milk up, it's a very fresh product.
We're looking at the challenges facing our state's dairy industry this hour with Mark Stevenson. He's a dairy policy analyst, and he directs the UW Center for Dairy Profitability. You can join in. Dairy farmers, do the recent bankruptcies of Dean and Borden worry you? Does it impact you in any way? Have you had to sell your herd recently? What are fellow farmers telling you as to their biggest hurdles they're facing? What are their fears? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Mark, Kroger and Walmart are doing the processing on their own now. Walmart opened up a processing plant in Indiana in 2018. How could this put pressures on the industry and the supply chain as a whole?
It does put some pressures on those other processors. So, for example, a Dean Foods would put milk out under their own name. So you go into a retail store, you'll find typically some Dean Foods products there. But you'll also find a store brand name, and you'll find other brand names perhaps. And Dean Foods may have been bottling all of those and distributing them. So a Dean Foods has to put a lot of different product in their cooler. They have to keep track of all those different things. They're often called stock keeping units or SKUs or SKUs. And it's not unusual for a fluid milk plant to have maybe 300 of those. So it's a lot to keep track of. It's expensive. And a captive plant, as they're referred to, like a Kroger plant or a Walmart plant, is a plant that only services their stores. So they have very many fewer product categories to need to keep track of. And they're
much more streamlined.
Much more streamlined. The order taking is also simpler. Their stores simply let them know how much they need, and that gets put on a truck with other groceries and distributed to the stores.
So would they be their prices be driving down the market then?
They do tend to be very low-cost plants, simply because they're only doing one thing. And, you know, that does put some competition in the marketplace. Obviously, it's not for everybody, and there is a place for some of the brand name products. You know, Borden is a well-beloved name, and that resurrection of the Borden product, I think, really came around because of some of the nostalgia that people had about the Borden logo.
Wisconsin lost 10% of its dairy farms last year, record high. The state usually sees a 4% decline in herd numbers each year. What was the biggest factor driving those losses?
We've had 5 years of relatively low milk prices. And, you know, farms have become used to a cyclical nature of prices, that we have a year when prices are quite good, and then we'll see a decline in prices over maybe a 2 to 3 year time period, and then prices recover. This was 5 years. So farms simply just didn't have the cash reserves or the credit in some cases to be able to make it through that kind of time period. And that's really the reason for the accelerated losses.
What are prices doing right now?
They're recovering. November milk price, which milk prices are lagged by 1 month, was one of the most recent months that we've had. And it was the highest, the largest milk price that we've seen since 2014. So they have recovered a fair amount, and the average price this year will be about $2.30 or so higher than they were in 2018. Just to put that into some context, you know, that's a considerable amount more for dairy producers, probably 12-15% higher.
What have you talked to with dairy producers? How are they getting through this time?
Well, this has been difficult. One of the things that you do, of course, is you just cinch up your belt. I mean, you don't spend money on things that you probably should. Surely you're trying to feed the cows as well as you can during that time period, because those are your sales. But maybe you put off doing things like painting the barn or replacing equipment that really probably should be replaced until we have a better year.
We're talking about bankruptcies, other challenges facing our state dairy industry this hour. We're talking with UW Dairy Policy Analyst Mark Stevenson. Dairy farmers, do the recent bankruptcies of Dean Foods and Borden, do they worry you? Does it impact you directly? Have you decided to sell your herd? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to this conversation on our state's dairy industry, and we'll bring in dairy farmer Darren Van Ruden. That's in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the historic losses in our state's dairy herd. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. At the start of this year, Wisconsin had almost 7,300 licensed dairy farms. The rate of dairy farmer loss has more than doubled in the last few years. Farmers, has the industry's stresses taken a toll on your health? How are you coping? What would it take to get dairy farms back in the black? profitable? What do you want to see out in the local and national legislation? Join in any point, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Mark Stevenson stays with us. He directs the Center for Dairy Profitability at UW-Madison. And now let's bring in Darren Van Ruden to the conversation. He's president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and he owns a 50-cow organic dairy farm in Westby. Darren, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate, and good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Darren.
So, Darren, Dean Foods had a processing plant or has a processing plant here in Wisconsin. Borden does not. What kind of effect do you see of these Chapter 11 bankruptcy filings have on Wisconsin's overall dairy industry?
Well, you know, I think as Mark said earlier, it hasn't had a real big impact at this point in time because the facilities are still processing the milk and bringing the milk in and distributing it to the channels that it normally does. But, you know, down the road, if there's a plant closure, especially in coming into the spring of the year, you're looking at a lot of milk that's going to need to be processed. And whether or not there's the facilities in the region to handle that certainly makes a difference on the not only the price of the milk, but also farmers' really mental health and how they feel about the whole situation. Because once you look at a situation where there might not be the ability to sell your milk, that puts a real stress on the farmers and what they can and can't do.
It can really disrupt the market as a whole. What have farmers in your organization been telling you?
Well, we do have a couple of members that ship to the Dean's plant. So, you know, they have been contacted by Dean's Foods and are kept abreast of what's going on and are, you know, comfortable right now with what's going on. But they still have that worry on a, you know, monthly basis of whether or not they're going to have a processor to take their milk. They're hoping that things can work out in the courts to, you know, with the bankruptcy. There is the option that another processor can buy that plant and keep that plant up and running. And so that's really what farmers' wishes and hopes are, is that the facilities will continue to be working and buying their milk for the processing part of it.
And Darren, you run a small organic dairy farm. How is your farm doing in this current climate?
Well, you know, better this year. Back in 2017, there was quite a few new dairy farms that came on, and a couple of really large ones that made a difference in the amount of milk that was coming into the organic system. And so prices dropped substantially back then. Last year, prices came back up. There were some new markets that were found. And so right now, the organic dairy industry, I would say, is doing all right. The prices could be a little bit higher, but like Mark said, you know, the organic industry, too, is tightening their belt up a little bit and are sustaining right now. But in order to make those improvements and make sure that the farms are moving forward, you know, a couple of dollars more, 100 weight would certainly help in the organic sector, but it certainly is really needed on the conventional side.
Talking with Darren Van Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. He's also an organic dairy farmer in Westby. Mark Stevenson here as well, dairy policy analyst, director of the UW Center for Dairy Profitability. You as well, you can join in. What would it take to get the dairy industry back on its feet? What do you want to see out of local and national bills, legislation? Do you see plant-based beverages replacing traditional milk sources? Join in, 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Mark, there's data out of the Agriculture Department that shows the sales of milk as a beverage hasn't risen much since 1985. How much can we blame this on specialty drinks like fruit juices and sports drinks?
The beverage category has been tremendously competitive. We've had a lot of new entrants in that segment. And honestly, one of the biggest competitors for beverage milk has been water. You may not think about it, of course, because it's just accepted nowadays, but all of the bottled waters and things and the additional consumption there has meant that we've kind of pushed milk off into a less attractive segment for a lot of people. So that's been one of the big problems for milk. Another problem, of course, has been changing tastes and preferences that consumers have. I mean, when I grew up, there would have been like three boxes of cereal on the table every morning, and you know, it would have been my choice to which one to have, but there was going to be milk on any of them, and that was every morning. And cereal consumption is way down, and with that, of course, milk. So that's another issue.
Sales of plant-based drinks grew more than 60% from 2012 to 2017. And last year, U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin reintroduced legislation that would prohibit plant-based drinks from being labeled as milk. And these are your soy milks, your coconut milks, your almond milk, your cashew milk. How much of a threat do these products present to milk?
Well, I think it's as much an irritant as anything to the dairy industry. Maybe Darren could comment on that as well. But, you know, for example, I don't think that most people are actually confused about the fact that almond milk is not milk as we would know it, or soy milk is not milk as we would know it. They're different products. But the very definition of milk in the Food and Drug Administration does indicate that it has to come from a mammal. And obviously, almonds and soybeans don't.
Darren, what do you make of the variations we're seeing on milk here and introducing these plant-based products like your soy and almond and your cashews?
Well, you know, that certainly has an impact, you know, very minimal, I would say, at best. But, you know, and it's also an income for farmers from other parts of the nation. So, you know, you don't want to condemn them or make them not have a market. But I think, you know, what Senator Baldwin's trying to do with the legislation is make sure that labeling of products is correct. And, you know, the apple growers don't call it apple milk. The orange growers don't call it orange milk. You know, so the idea really is that if it's coming from a plant, it should be either a juice or a beverage, and not using milk as a label. And, you know, dairy farmers and even a lot of the almond growers, the pecan growers, and soybean folks, too, say as farmers that it shouldn't be called milk. You know, when that was first derived as an alternative, it certainly was meant to displace some of the milk, and that's why those labels were used. You know, if we're going to be truthful about what's being proposed to the consumers, we should really use the proper terminology.
Well, let's bring in a call now. John is joining us from Bayfield. Good morning, John.
Good morning. I just wanted to bring up that I had a brother that he branched off. He went into sheep's milk production and cheese production, which stores it long term. You know, so that's a value there.
So went into more of a value-added specialty products. Mark, what are you seeing there?
I think that there are some opportunities for innovation in the beverage category. Sheep's milk is perhaps one, and, you know, certainly we have goats and a number of others as well. In this state, I think most of us would probably be thinking about that more for cheese use, because you can make some very interesting cheese products from other milks as well. But conventional cow milk doesn't mean that it's condemned to the same old cardboard carton and product that we've had before. We have seen some innovation recently. Fair Life is one of those products, and you may have seen that in some of the grocery stores. It is milk from conventional cows. It has been ultra-filtered, which is a process that takes some of the lactose and sugar out of the milk. And that's been increasing in sales quite a bit.
Darren, what do you see out of specialty products? And, you know, you have an organic dairy. Do you have perhaps more demand because you are a niche area?
Well, getting into that niche market certainly helps, whether it's a cheese product or a different type of milk. I know dairy farmers right now are starting to really look at the A2A milk that processes out there, which takes some of those ingredients out of milk that don't allow consumers to consume them. And, you know, innovation is really critical at times like right now when prices are low and farmers are trying to find an extra few dollars to generate some more income for the farm. So it's essential. I think one of the issues that the Wisconsin dairy industry and really the national dairy industry is facing right now is that we've become somewhat of a mature organization. You know, since the late 80s, we've developed over 600 new varieties of cheeses here in the state of Wisconsin and in the United States. So there isn't a lot of room for growth in new products right now. But can we find that new beverage that'll be able to be consumed by more consumers?
Pausing right now with Darren Van Ruden. He is with the Wisconsin Farmers Union president, and Mark Stevenson, dairy policy analyst here at UW-Madison. Your thoughts as well, 800-642-1234. Back after a news update on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're looking at the challenges facing our state's dairy industry as we saw this record number of dairy farms go dark last year, 818 to be exact. And the trend line over a decade shows Wisconsin farms are growing fewer but larger. Average herd size is about 170 cows per herd today. A decade ago, it was roughly 100 cows per herd, and milk production has soared. Are you concerned about dairy farm bankruptcies in relation to the broader economy? Is your farm trying a new approach to stay profitable? What are you doing? Do you see signs of optimism? Join in at any point, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Darren Van Ruden and Mark Stevenson, who are with us through the hour. Darren is president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and Mark directs the Center for Dairy Profitability at UW-Madison. Let's take another call now. Tom is joining us from Burlington this morning. Good morning, Tom.
It's just an old silo by the side of the road, standing desperately alone. My question is, with labor, I'd like to see kids get on farms, and I wish the school programs could get kids somehow getting working on farms. And I understand that cows don't have to be milked at 6 o'clock. You can actually get them on a different kind of time schedule so that the kids could actually get over there and do something.
Tom, thanks for
real early.
Yeah, so getting younger people onto farms and milking cows, you know, or cows. Mark, you're at a university, and we were talking earlier about students going in early and milking cows.
Oh, we do have students that are very much involved in learning to a new skill set, you know, to be able to get them out and into the industry. And, you know, the surprising thing is that many of them don't come from farm backgrounds. So some of them do come here from farms to learn more. Maybe Darren, I don't know, didn't have much choice in becoming a farmer. He probably started work on family farm pretty early. But other kids do have that choice, and they find that it's a lifestyle that they love. Getting into an industry is still difficult. It's a very capital-intensive business, but it is certainly possible.
Darren, what was it like for you being on a farm and the younger generation pitching in on all those duties?
Well, it's certainly, you know, it's a lifestyle. And, you know, from my earliest days that I can remember, I really wanted it to stay home and be that farmer. You know, I actually would have much rather stayed home and helped Dad milk the cows and plant the crops and harvest the crops and go to school. But there's that priority that parents put on education. And so I was off to school through my high school years and then came home and farmed. But, you know, it's one of those things that I think Tom is right. You know, we have to get kids back on the farm in order to make that next generation there. And also it's the kind of the work ethic that comes along with not only dairy farming, but most of agriculture. You learn that when it's time to get the crops planted or harvested or the cows milked or the cleaning chores that need to be done along with the dairy production side of the industry, that it needs to be done. So you get up, you do things, and you move on. As farms are getting larger and larger, cows are being milked 24 hours a day right now. So there is those opportunities. You know, the biggest question for the dairy producers themselves is, can you afford to have students come in and milk cows for you? Because it's an income, or an expense, I should say, that farmers have to pay to in order to have students come in. Unless people are willing to work for little or nothing, it's hard for those dairy producers to hire new people into their farming operations.
Well, let's take a look at economic issues and trade and tariffs. Mark, the U.S. has renegotiated the NAFTA deal. It's now the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. It's said to have enough bipartisan support to reach President Trump's desk. What does this new deal do to open up Canada for dairy producers?
Well, Canada has been a very different kind of country. They've made a decision there to have milk production quotas, and that helps restrict the supply of milk, which helps to keep their milk prices a bit higher. But, of course, if you're restricting milk production internally, you also have to restrict milk and dairy products from coming in over the borders. So we would love to sell them more dairy products, but they've had very restrictive quotas on what can be let in. The USMCA agreement does increase quotas on some products a little bit before we hit the high levels of tariffs on those. And, you know, it's an improvement. I think that while it's something that we should be glad that's been renegotiated, it will be a small positive for dairy farmers. It's not going to be a huge positive, but it's a positive.
Darren, what do you make of the renegotiated deal, the USMCA? Will it make a difference for farmers?
Well, like Mark said, you know, it's going to be a real small positive, you know, but any time you can get to a positive, that's a good thing, especially when you've been in so many years of, the downturn in the economics on the dairy industry. But you also have to look at, you know, some of these trade agreements. Are we pitting farmer against farmer in the country, different countries? And that's something that Wisconsin Farmers Union members really don't want to see happen. We'd much rather, fulfill an open market versus trying to go into a market that is maybe full, or they can provide their own product within their own country. It would be like us having to take milk from other countries, which we really do here in the United States, when we really don't need it because we produce enough for our own needs. But because of the way trade deals are set up, sometimes you allow that uncompetitive market into your own market because of the way the trade deal has been designed and set up.
We'll wait and see on that. Talking with Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, we have Mark Stevenson as well, who directs the Center for Dairy Profitability at UW-Madison. You can join in. How have tensions with China affected your operation? Are you concerned about the tensions around migrant workers and how that affects the labor you hire? Have you had to diversify your operation to keep it afloat? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Margot now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Margot.
Hi, I'm a consumer of milk. I don't understand why people have stopped drinking milk and eating cereal. Here we are in the dead of winter with snow on the ground. We should be eating hot oatmeal and putting milk on it. I'm an admirer of dairy farmers. I think they are the unsung heroes of society. I am glad that at the current time, the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection is no longer persecuting small family farms and putting them out of business for responding to market trends. There is a large market of people who want natural milk, not pasteurized, and they were beating down the barn doors to get it a few years ago, and some farmers were making a decent living for their families selling it. And if people are willing to take the risk and they're not hurting their neighbors, I see no harm in it.
Margo,
that's free enterprise.
Yeah, Margo, thank you so much for the thoughts there. Let's end there with raw milk. What do you see, Mark?
Well, we have a number of states that do allow sale of raw milk, and it's highly regulated, though. I mean, a raw milk handler really needs to make sure that they are testing their product much more regularly to assure that they don't have organisms in them. Milk is a highly nutritious beverage, and it supports not just our own bodies, but the growth of organisms that can be bad for us as well. And this is why we've pasteurized milk for many, many years. Does it change the flavor? A little bit, perhaps, but, you know, not by a great deal. So I do think that, you know, a consumer has to weigh those two things.
Darren, unpasteurized milk, do you see demand out there for it? And will Wisconsin go this direction at all?
Well, yes, there certainly is that demand. You know, over the years, there's been this debate going on and on. One of the things that Wisconsin Farmers Union has, you know, lobbied on is, as you talked about earlier in the segment, our lobbying is becoming bigger and bigger. You know, the thing is that the consumer and the farmer really need to have that face-to-face contact in the view of our members. And therefore, you know, as a consumer, you know who your farmer is, and you get to see the operation. And if the operation doesn't look like it has the best conditions for, you know, not only the production of the milk, but the cleanliness of the milk, you simply go try to find another farmer to do that. So it really makes that connection between the farmer and the consumer a high priority, which really then you have an inspector on your farm every month. Yes, they're not considered a grade A dairy inspector, but if it's an informed consumer that knows what they're looking for, you should be able to allow that transaction. We're hoping that the state of Wisconsin at some point in time will take that up again. You know, it's not on the books right now at all to look at anything, but as consumer demand continues to grow and it adds another source of income to dairy farmers, hopefully we can see that.
Darren, last week, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss's Task Force on Water Quality released recommendations to get a handle on water quality issues in the state. Its plan includes finding ways to get farmers into water conservation. Would that have an impact on our state's dairy farmers?
Well, it will have an impact. Probably the amount of the impact will be, you know, seen here in the future. We can kind of guess right now what the total impact's going to be, but when you're looking at, you know, the state's number one resource, natural resource, you know, we need to make sure that it's protected and we have, you know, generations upon generations of good quality clean milk here in the state of Wisconsin. And I think the Speaker's task force is going to, you know, start us down the road to address some of those issues. It's probably going to take a little bit of negotiations and talks to see what's going to be best for agriculture. But as the state's number one industry, we certainly need to look at, you know, how can we protect that number one most important natural resource.
Spending the hour on the dairy industry with Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and Mark Stevenson. He's a UW dairy policy analyst. And you, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the consolidation of our state's dairy industry here on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We've learned that this prolonged period of low milk prices from 2014 to 2019 has forced many farms to sell their herds. And this contraction that we're seeing isn't leveling off, even as milk prices improve. So what do you think the future holds for the nation's dairy state? Are you concerned that small farms are a thing of the past, or is this decade a blip as you look at the history of farming in your family and what your ancestors went through? We're at 800-642-1234. We have the director of the Center for Dairy Profitability at UW-Madison, Mark Stevenson, here, and Darren Von Ruden, who owns a 50-head organic dairy and is president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Mark, concentrated animal feeding operations, CAFOs, have really grown significantly here in Wisconsin. What do you see as the future of small farms? Are CAFOs the new norm?
Well, a CAFO is almost a threshold that you cross. You know, so for example, about 700 cows, forms or constitutes what becomes a CAFO. We've had increasing herd size going on forever. We hit the peak in dairy farm numbers in this country back in the 1930s. And since that time period, we've been consolidating, meaning losing dairy farms, but we're producing much more milk than ever before. So to some extent, you know, the structure is just shifting. When I started some 35, 40 years ago, if you'd asked me what a small farm is, I would have said, I don't know, maybe 12, 15 cows, because we saw quite a few of those. And today, certainly Darren would qualify as a small farm, and I would have probably said even, 100 cows or less is a small farm. So it's a moving target.
Darren, why have you chosen to stay small, 50 head?
Well, it's one of those things. I'm more happy managing cows versus managing people. I think what the industry is really forcing some folks to do right now is to look at going into both managing people and cows. And, I've just been lucky enough to find a avenue to collect a few more dollars from the marketplace to keep the farming operation going. And it's the structure that is out there right now is really questionable whether it's going to be feasible to continue forever. And when you're seeing more and more smaller farms going out of business, that consolidation, concentration issue really becomes something that we want to look at. And I know one thing that Wisconsin Farmers Union is working on right now is it's been called the Dairy Together program. And we're trying to find a way to look at some kind of supply management or growth management program that can help all sectors of the dairy industry. If we had a program that restricted large growth in large numbers, would we be in a similar situation as producers and processors looking at what's happening in the country to our north in Canada, talking to producers and processors up there, the majority of them are really happy with what's going on because they know that what their bottom line is going to look like really at the beginning of the year because they have a price that's pretty stable. It does go up and down on a quarterly basis just depending on production and consumer demand, but it's a lot more stable than what we see here. When you look at 30, 40, even 50% drops in prices within a six-month period here in the U.S., which has happened, kind of on a cyclical process until the last 5 years, it really is hard to know what your budget should look like. With some stability, it means that maybe younger producers and even non-dairy farmers that want to get into the industry have an opportunity to come into the industry.
Mark, it sounds like some predictability would be helpful right now.
I think it would be of great help to an industry. I mean, we characterize industries differently. Apple, as a good example, is a very integrated industry, and they wouldn't manufacture more iPhones than they think they can sell at a reasonable price. But the dairy industry has, 30-some thousand independent decision makers that decide how much milk am I going to produce this year. And when we collectively overproduce, then market prices have to fall to a level that clears that. So coordinating milk production, making expansion maybe a bit more thoughtful is not the worst thing in the world to consider.
Mark, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Mark Stevenson is a dairy policy analyst, directs the UW Center for Dairy Profitability. And Darren, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Kate.
Darren Von Ruden is president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. And for disclosure, the Wisconsin Farmers Union is a business sponsor of WPR. Wisconsin saw its wettest year ever last year, and scientists say climate change is driving more frequent intense storms. As Danielle Kading reports, heavier rains are making it tougher to keep untreated sewage and stormwater out of the Great Lakes and state waterways. 30-year-old Connor Andrews loves swimming. He especially loves swimming at beaches like this one along Lake Michigan. At a lakefront coffee shop not far away on a cold winter day, he says it's unlike anything else.
It's an amazing feeling, a lot more so than jumping in an inland lake. And it's soothing mentally to come and enjoy Lake Michigan.
But he has to check conditions before jumping into water that may be polluted by stormwater runoff or sewer overflows. Parts of the city and region rely on combined sewers that collect stormwater and sewage for treatment. But increasingly heavy rains can overwhelm them. In 2018, the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District saw 6 combined sewer overflows, the most events since 1999. They sent 1.2 billion gallons of stormwater and untreated sewage into waters that drain into Lake Michigan.
It's when you get 2 inches of rain in 20 minutes that it overwhelms the sewer system.
That's district spokesman Bill Graffin on his way to the Jones Island facility. It's one of 2 plants that treat wastewater for more than 1 million people. Once there, it's a 3-minute ride in an elevator to reach an underground pump station. These pumps move water from the district's deep tunnel up into the plant for treatment. Graffin says the tunnel can store 521 million gallons of waste and stormwater until it can be treated and released.
Our goal is always to capture and clean as much of it as we can. Occasionally you can't. Our biggest priority during a storm is to prevent basement backups. And the only way to do that is you open up the relief valves in the sewer system.
Milwaukee isn't the only city struggling with sewer overflows. Data from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources shows the rest of the state saw the most overflows in 2018 since 2010, releasing 150 million gallons of waste. And Milwaukee and other communities released millions more last year as the state saw its wettest year on record. Senior scientist Steve Vavaris with the Nelson Institute Center for Climatic Research at the University of Wisconsin-Madison says climate change is driving Wisconsin's record wet conditions.
And so when we do get rain or snow, it tends to be heavier than it used to.
More intense storms are stressing sewer systems as local governments are struggling with upkeep. In 2012, Wisconsin's roughly 600 publicly owned wastewater systems reported they need to invest more than $6 billion to meet federal water quality goals. That includes Ashland. The city saw 15 million gallons overflow into Lake Superior during one weekend storm in June 2018. Ashland Public Works Director John Butler says more than a third of its sewer pipes are more than 50 years old.
And the rate of replacement and repair over the last recent history hasn't kept up with the rate at which it's aging.
The problem plagues communities across the Great Lakes, a drinking water source for 48 million people. By mid-century, Milwaukee could see up to 20% more untreated waste flowing into waterways without changes. That's according to Sandra McClellan, a professor with the School of Freshwater Sciences at UW-Milwaukee. She says increasing storms could drive poor water quality.
And when it happens in spring and during the swimming season, that's when people can be exposed to that water.
In one extreme case, a cryptosporidium outbreak sickened around 403,000 people around the Milwaukee area in 1993. The rash of illness followed heavy rains. Experts speculated human sewage and animal waste may have been the source. The city has since invested millions to guard against exposure, but other communities may be vulnerable. Both Milwaukee and Ashland are making investments to address their sewer systems and using green infrastructure to capture rain with the hope they can prevent more waste from entering the Great Lakes. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio. And this story comes to us from a reporting partnership between Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Watch. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.